I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Today, we continue our series of one-on-one interviews with the Democratic candidates for mayor of Philadelphia. This is part of WHYY's extensive coverage of primary campaigns this spring. Election Day is on May 19th, and our guest is Milton Streep. He was elected to the Pennsylvania House of Representatives in 1978 and to the Pennsylvania Senate in 1980, where he served 4 years. He also switched his party affiliation from Democrat to Republican, giving the GOP control of the Senate. In 2008, he was fined $413,000 and sentenced to 30 months in prison for unpaid taxes. He has run for the U.S. House, for Philadelphia City Council, and in 2011 for mayor of Philadelphia, when he received 36,000 votes in that primary election, lost to Mayor Michael Nutter. Milton Streep had his candidacy challenged this year because of questions about his residency and his party affiliation. A judge ruled that he could stay on the primary ballot as a Democrat, even though he was listed as an independent when filing nomination petitions, and that he did live in the city of Philadelphia. Milton Streep, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good being here.
So why do you keep switching parties, Republican, Democrat, Independent?
Well, you go into politics to help your people. And when I got to Harrisburg, I found out one thing right away. The minority will have its say. The majority will have its way. So when you're a minority and you come from the minority, you should be in a position to have your way rather than just your say. I had enough people up there talking. Secondly, you don't run for office as a lifetime profession. I mean, you know, you run there because you have a purpose. Political power is the ability to achieve purpose, strength required to bring about social, political, economic change. So the people that I wanted to represent needed somebody to bring home the veggie burgers. Okay. So
did they have veggie burgers back in the 1980s?
Oh, yeah. Well, they need somebody to bring home the leafy vegetables. Okay.
But they did not reelect you. So clearly your switching of parties didn't sit well with the people who sent you to Harrisburg.
No, that wasn't true. What happened was the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, see, I entered the political process in Harrisburg with such propelling force that people said, we got to get this guy out of here. So I used the existing laws, election laws, to position myself to continue, okay? And what happened was the person that they put up against me was clearly in violation of Section 5, Article 2 of the Pennsylvania Constitution, which says you have to be domiciled in your district 1 year next to the election prior to putting. So Roxanne Jones, who was running, they put up the run against me, was getting federal funds, and she was on welfare in the whole 9 years out of the district. But Judge Rogers said, well, you can't run. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court, it was so blatant that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, exclusive jurisdiction lies within the Senate to judge the qualification of its members. That was never the question before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. So I got beat because there were two wards at that time that they didn't report the vote in until they found out how many votes they needed. And we went down to open the machines. They told us we had to open. No, I didn't have enough money to open the machines. But
I don't want to spend too much time in the past, but just reading something that actually Tom Farrick wrote for the next mayor, that at that time you actually lived in Oak Lane, which was actually farther out of the district than Roxanne Jones.
No, you know, Tom Farrick is a guy that he's very interesting. And I like Tom Farrick because when I get Tom Farrick writing, I know I'm doing well. You know, you have to get the people who are adamantly and arrogantly against you to say something nasty about you. And once they do that, you say, I'm doing well. I must be a threat. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they wouldn't write about you. So what happened was I had owned a house on Diamond Street. And I also had purchased a house up on, which was about a block out of the district. But I wasn't living up there. So you can own more than one house, and it's not where you live. It's where you're domiciled. And I was domiciled on Diamond Street, have been domiciled there for years. So, you know, Tom Farrick didn't do his homework.
Well, and I don't want to spend the hour talking about Tom Farrick. Let me just, because there was a question about your residency running this go-around, and a question about whether you lived in Morristown, New Jersey, or in Philadelphia. The judge ruled that you do live in Philadelphia, but still, that's been a question that has dogged you for some time.
It doesn't dog me. Obviously, I'm such a threat that every time I get ready to run, they raise a question about where I live, you know. And every time the judge says, well, this is the third time that it has been ruled by the courts that I'm domiciled in the city of Philadelphia. Now, normally, once the courts rules, that's sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But every time I run, they have to relitigate that same issue, you know. And it's gotten to the point now where I don't even have to hire a lawyer. I litigate it myself. It's so repetitive.
Well, let me just do a couple of more things, and then we will get to your candidacy here in Philadelphia, because there was also a question about whether you were married or not. And this is this year, told reporters that, and this is reading from Newsworks, actually, that you were married and your wife lived in Morristown. And then a couple of days later, you said that you weren't married. So are you married or not, Milton?
No, I never said I was married. Okay. What I said was, we live a common law marriage, okay, and that we have been friends for 25 years now, okay? Now, this was, as far as I was concerned, the lawyer, Kevin Greenberg, went way out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
He went way out of balance. He tried to get into my personal life, which had absolutely nothing to do with it, and you know, he's going to pay a price for that down the road, because that was just totally uncalled for. It was out of balance, you know, asking me who I slept with. And I mean, he just really, really went overboard.
Well, and I agree with you about not going into people's personal lives. But again, I'm looking at a quote here. My wife lives where she lives in Morristown. Her name is Mrs. Street. What else could it be? A couple of days later, when asked if he was currently married, Street, that would be you, said no.
No, that's not true. That's not true. When I got out of prison, okay, and people they don't want to look at this. You have to be able to have a home plan. The federal government said you cannot live in Jersey. Absolutely. You cannot have a home plan in Jersey. That was in 2010, okay? You can't go there. You don't live there, okay? And that's the federal government. Okay, so I had to have a home plan in Pennsylvania, and that was in 2010. And ever since 2010, the federal government says that people want to lift me out of Philadelphia and put me someplace else. You know, so I don't know how many more times that issue would have to be litigated before people would say, well, the man lives in Philadelphia. By his works, they should know I live here. From my past, they should know I live here. But let me just say this to you. I am not the only elected official that has a property in Jersey or some other part of the country. Almost every elected official does. Franny Rizzo sent out his marriage reception tickets for his home in Jersey, you know. But, you know, it's one of those things where the people that I represent, that whole group of people that I represent, which I'm sure we'll talk about,
right,
is a threat. If I can get those people to vote, then there's nobody that can trump their numbers. So they don't want to give me an opportunity to do that.
You mentioned the fact that you served time in federal prison. This is for unpaid taxes. Why didn't you, it was just 3 years running. Why didn't you pay your taxes?
It wasn't for unpaid taxes. You people in the media never get it right. OK, you don't go to prison for not paying.
Well, you failed to pay your taxes.
No. You don't. Let me get the language
okay,
right
go
now.
Ahead, go ahead.
You don't go to prison for not paying. You go to prison for not filing. Okay. The difference is, once you file and they know how much you owe, then they confiscate whatever assets you have to offset the debts. Okay, they don't put you in jail. They'll take your house, they'll take your car, they'll take your shoes, they'll take whatever they need to offset the debt. So when people say he didn't go to prison for not paying, is not true. You have to file so that the IRS has some idea as to the amount of money that you owe. And incidentally,
so you did owe
of course, if you don't file, you know, I've never said I didn't owe taxes. But what happens when you're privately or you're employed, personally employed, okay? You're responsible for your taxes when you're employed by an employer. The employer takes your taxes out.
Right.
Okay. So there are hundreds and hundreds of people across the country who pay the federal government once their business gets a foothold. You know, they'll pay their, you know, and I have the records on all that stuff. But what happened here is my civil process and my taxes was omitted. They didn't even bother. Went straight to criminal court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, normally what happened is the federal government would go to to take you to civil court, and they'll assess you. They'll say, you owe X number of dollars, and then if you don't pay it, then they'll take you to court. Well, they leapfrog up over all of that and took me straight to criminal court. And when I got in criminal court, I said, my taxes are prepared. Can I file them? They said, no. So that's an issue that's over. I went, I
it
did
is,
my time.
But
I came
you're the
back.
Only one that you I know of running for mayor of the fifth largest city, that would be Philadelphia, who has served time in prison. Just a quick follow-up, though. I mean, do you believe that you should have paid your taxes and that the IRS is owed taxes by
people? Oh, absolutely. Everybody should pay their taxes. We should have paid money into the pension fund. We should have done, there are people owe debt and they should have paid it. You know, Governor Rendell came out as governor with $400 million. The state was in debt. The school district is in debt. Everybody should pay. Debt is debt, no matter who owes it. You know, I should pay. We should, people who've worked hard for pension, the money should have been put in a pension fund. It wasn't. So, you know, there's this thing about debt that has a special meaning when Milton Street's debt, but it has a different type of meaning when it's the federal government debt or some other institution's debt, where all these people who graduated from these high institutions couldn't obviously manage so that there would be no debt. So there's debt.
So should you, I mean, in hindsight, and this goes back to a couple of years, actually, to 2002, 2003, 2004, so a decade, should you have filed your taxes, to use your language?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You always file, you know, but the problem is you're not, there are people who file 2 or 3 years, you know, and they're not prosecuted. You know, if you would check my record from 1980 or 81, I think I didn't file in 82, 83, 84, and then I filed in 85. And I, you know, I had, because I was employed by my own business, you know. And you don't have enough money, so you pay the federal government less. You know, I mean, that's a practice. I mean, there are lawyers, there are doctors, there are a lot of people who owe the federal government who are self-employed. So, you know, if you're involved in public life, then, you know, you get a higher level of scrutiny than you do if you're not in public life. So in retrospect, looking at it, you say, okay, Street, you're going to be involved in public life. You just better at least file these taxes, because if you don't, you're going to get a scrutiny that's above and over and above the scrutiny you got in 81, 82, or something when you won them.
Well, and we're almost having a break here, but when you're running for mayor and a city depends on people paying their taxes, would you agree that this is an important issue?
Well, the city also, all the people that work for the city, it depends on the city putting money in the pension fund. Right?
Right, absolutely.
Well, okay. Come on now.
We will pick up on that. We have a whole hour to discuss a whole bunch of things. And again, Milton Street is our guest in this hour of Radio Times. The fifth of six interviews that we're going to be doing with Democratic candidates for mayor of Philadelphia. He is our fifth. The final one is tomorrow, Tim Kinney. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are continuing our series of interviews with the Democratic candidates running for mayor of Philadelphia. The Pennsylvania primary is May 19th, just a couple of weeks away. The Republican candidate is running unopposed, and so far we have talked with Lynn Abraham, Doug Oliver, Anthony Hardy Williams, Nelson Diaz, and today it's Milton Street's turn, and tomorrow we'll be talking with Jim Kinney. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions for our and or comments for our guest, Milton Street? So why do you want to be mayor of Philadelphia?
Well, I want to be mayor to stop the violence. That's the cornerstone and foundation to my campaign. Every morning we wake up, somebody's shot. You know, a man can't walk his dog without getting shot. 3-year-old can't sit on the steps without getting shot. 15-year-old is shot coming home. Every morning there's somebody shot. Pizza guy was delivering pizza the other night. Somebody was shot. So I've put together this 414 community movement to stop the violence in our community and in our schools. I don't think that as long as there's violence in our schools, until we get some discipline in there, that teachers will be able to teach, and children will be able to maximize their God-given potential to learn. So I have this program, and I am the only candidate who's paid any attention, any serious attention to this violence since 2007. Like I've said, 2,500 people have been shot dead. You can't ride the subway safely. I mean, I don't need to keep because everybody knows about it, you know. But the violence is out of control, and we need to take care of it.
Well, let me ask you, you mentioned this 414 community movement to stop violence. It's a kind of a town watch idea, as I understand it. What would these people who are part of this movement do to reduce the violence in the city?
Well, the only people that can stop the violence in the community are the people that live there, okay? Watch Baltimore, and as it comes back, to where it should be. It's going to be the good people that's going to step up to the plate and take care of those out-of-control youth down there. I have a nephew that lives down there. I talked to him last night. So what these people will do is it costs $40,000 a year to keep a person in prison. So we're going to prevention, not punishment. And the young people, the people who are in the community, they will be paid. They have to be paid. They will be paid out of the criminal, the budget for criminal justice. So what happens is, people say, where the money coming from to pay people to keep the violence down, but they never ask where the $40,000 a year is coming from to put them in prison. Okay, so it's all comes out of the same pot.
You know? But is this different from, let's say, community policing, where police might be out on the street patrolling the areas? What kinds of, I guess, authority would these people be armed, for instance?
No. We've explained this. This is going to be the eyes and ears of the police department, okay? When you have community people on the street, two things happen. We will have police and community bonding together. The police and we'll have them in each district, okay? The police that serve the 14th district will be united with the people that they're serving in the community groups in there. We will have community meetings with the police and there. So we will restore the trust. We want to restore the trust. That's the first thing between the police and the community. And when the police come into the community and they see those young boys on the corner, community people know who they are. We will go up and we will be like mentors to them, and we will explain to them, you can stand on this corner, but let me tell you what it means to be a convicted felon. Let me tell you what it means, okay? And that's the type of program that we have. We won't have enough time for me to go through it on close detail today. But in those districts where the crime is high, we can deal with it.
It sounds like the interrupters. I mean, these are organized groups that have worked in other cities. I'm not sure if they're in Philadelphia or not, but the same idea is to intervene when it looks like things might be scaling out of control.
No. It's not to wait till you intervene. It's to have a consistent type of educational program going on to restore the trust. Mm-hmm. See, I'm opposed to a citywide citizens review board. There should be a citizens review board in every district with community people. Because there are different problems in the 14th district and in some of these districts where there's high crime than it might be in Center City or out in Fox Chase or some of those areas. So each district should have a communications and a working relationship with the community that it serves. Okay.
You said something to NBC News. They interviewed all the candidates, asking a bunch of questions, including what your first priority for mayor would be in terms of reducing crime in the city. One of the things you suggested was getting rid of Commissioner Ramsey.
As quick as I can.
How come?
Because there's been over 450,000 people in the city of Philadelphia who've had their civil rights violated.
What are you talking, stop and frisk?
Because of stop and frisk, okay? 80% of those were minorities. 80% were black, okay? And if I got my figures right, I think it was 8% that was Hispanic and 7 or 8% that were Caucasian. But in any event, don't quote me on that. It's pretty close.
Okay.
So what I'm saying to you is that when you have a police commissioner, okay, who can't understand, and he's been sued by people in the ACU and other people. So he's just not sensitive to the problem. Secondly, I was extremely upset by the way he maligned and painted the entire police department with one brush. We have good police officers in the city of Philadelphia. Their families are good people, okay? And what happens is we have 6,625 police officers. 461 were involved in shooting, okay? That means it's over 6,000 police officers in the city of Philadelphia who are good people. Some of them, in fact, have had guns for 12, 15, 20 years and never pulled them, okay? So you can't, as a police commissioner, condemn all those police officers and not support them. The police officers need to be supported by the mayor, by the police commissioner, and everybody. You know, because if I leave here today and something happened to me, who am I going to call? I'm going to call the police. Okay? So I don't want to think and I don't want to have a mindset that all the police out there are bad people and they'll shoot you.
But do you honestly think that that has been the message coming from Commissioner Ramsey to the people of Philadelphia?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I never heard Commissioner Ramsey stand up and defend his police officers. I heard, I mean, if you have 461 police officers that are shooting out of 6,000, why would you go to Washington? You can't manage that? You can't manage that. Come on, the mayor and the police and the police commissioner should be able to manage 461 people who are involved in shooting. And secondly, those shootings came from mostly patrol officers, okay? And it is unfair when you have 2,500 shootings in an area since 2007, to then you've created an attitude that in that area, these people will shoot you. So then you hire a young police officer and you put him out there in the middle of that area where people are shooting. If they shoot each other, they'll shoot the police officer too. So right where I live at 24th and, in around Lehigh, 22nd and Lehigh up there, they had four little white police officers down here.
Little white ones?
They were little. They weighed about 121. I mean, they were just small. They were small people. And you had all these black guys standing there with their pants hanging down on their butt and rags wrapped around their head. I'd be frightened too. You know, so there has to be a relationship between the community and the police officer so that we have community people walking with these new police officers saying, look, come on, meet these people here. Meet this guy here. Meet this guy here. These are not bad people. You know, if you don't have that type of interaction, then you're going to have killings.
Well, and I do want to move on, but I also want to just acknowledge the fact that as difficult as things are here in certain neighborhoods in Philadelphia, that the homicide rate across Philadelphia is the lowest it's been in something like 50 years. I think you have to go back to 1967 to find as high a homicide rate. Do you credit Commissioner Ramsey with any of that success?
No.
Why not?
Because I'm not concerned about the homicide rate. Come on. Our people have value. When one person was shot dead or was killed over in the Middle East by ISIL, Jordan sent out the Air Force.
So what are you
suggesting? So what do we talk about here is there wasn't 400 shot this year. There was only 321. So the 321 people don't have value. So, hey, be happy. The killings
are going
the
downgrade. Well, I don't think anyone's happy about it, but it's certainly going in the right direction.
Listen, there are national studies that show that the murder homicide rates in the inner cities will go up and go down and go down depending on the economic situation, depending on certain other environments. It was done by, I forget his name, but it was the University of Yale. Okay, they did the study. And that didn't have anything to do with the police department. And secondly, under Ramsey, there's bogus counting. You know, they'll have people in the morgue out there and who's been shot and killed, and they'll count him well, the reason for death unknown.
Reason
for death
unknown. Bogus counting on the part of the police department?
Of course, you know when somebody got shot, right? How can you have so many deaths that are unknown? Reason for death unknown, okay? And it's just not right.
Well, let me reintroduce you. That's Milton Street. He is running for mayor of Philadelphia, one of six Democratic candidates for mayor. And again, Election Day, and it's not just here in Philadelphia, but across the state, is on May 19th. And we've been doing one-on-one sit-downs with the candidates running for mayor and opening up the line so you can put your questions to them. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and we will get some folks in on the conversation as well. Let me quote something where you, I have to say, seem to contradict yourself on the sale of the Philadelphia Gas Works, PGW. You told Newsworks here at WHYY that one of the worst, most critical mistakes made in years was not selling PGW. Then you told NBC the PGW sale now, in hindsight, would have been a terrible mistake.
I never said that. When did I say that?
Well, I'm looking at it right here. This is an interview that you did.
No, I'll tell you exactly.
With Jim Rosenfield, published April 3rd, 2015.
I'm going to tell you exactly what I said. Okay. I said the way city council handled the sale of it was a terrible mistake, and I will explain it to you. You don't go on television and say you're going to put $200 million in the school district and you're going to put $200 million out of the $400 million that allegedly was going to be made by that into the retirement fund or the pension fund, okay, and then do nothing. Mm. And then do nothing. Don't hold public hearings. Don't do anything. I said that was a terrible mistake, okay? And it was a mistake because, number one, okay, people in Harrisburg that has to send money are listening. And when they say, oh, Philadelphia is going to have a couple hundred million dollars to put in their schools, now you do nothing and you go up to Harrisburg with hat in hand. What those people are going to say to you, get back down to Philadelphia and sell your gas company or do whatever it is you have to do. You're not going to sit on $400 million worth of assets and come up here and ask us for our money. That's what I said.
So you support the sale, but you would have done it differently if you had been the mayor.
I would support the sale of the gas company, but I would have gone through the process. You know, don't stand up and tell me you don't have the votes. We elect those council people. Call the vote. I want to know who's going to vote and who's not going to vote. I want to know what their feeling is. I don't know whether he has the
mayor
votes or not.
Can't force city council president in the city to have a vote.
I'm saying to you that the council president made a mistake, and he made it very, very difficult for anybody to go to Harrisburg now and have an open conversation with the legislators up there. Because of the way he handled that situation. And I'm telling you, I served in a Republican caucus with the liberals. I mean, the Democratic caucus with the liberals and the Republican caucus with the conservatives. And I will tell you, the conservatives are in control, what they're going to say. Bob Jubilier, who was the majority leader at the time, I mean, when I was up there, is a lobbyist up there. I called Bob. Hey, Bob, what do you think? Oh, man, you got trouble up there, boy. I haven't called him, but I know what he'd say because I know him.
So is it too late?
Well,
has the damage been done?
Well, the damage is done, yeah. You know, we're going to have to do something to come up with some money because that sale, because of public comments of the gas company, and we're sitting on all that money, even though it's an asset, and we were offered so many hundreds of millions of dollars for it, and we didn't sell it. And it wasn't the fact that we didn't sell it. It was the way that we dealt with the process. If you're not going to sell it, and there's some question about not going to sell it, make no public statements. Don't talk about the profits. Don't talk about what you're going to do with the profits. Just keep your mouth shut, you know, because it's going to come back to bite you.
How do you think, then, the next mayor, whoever it is, can mend relationship with city council or have a different kind of relationship with city council compared to this current mayor?
Well, we don't know who the council people are going to be, okay, because there are a lot of people running for council. And I wouldn't, you know, I'm not one who would say that all of the incumbents are going to be reelected. You know, I think there should be term limits anyhow, you know, on council people because it becomes a club. You know, no matter how bad a job you do, the council people support you. You know, we have Kenny, who was a council person running for mayor, and he's talking about the council people that support him. You know, it doesn't matter whether, you know, I support him because he can do a good job or I think he can do this. He's a council person. We support him. Senator Williams is saying, oh, I have five council people support me. And I'm like, so what? You know, who cares? You know, what are you going to do going forward?
But don't you have to have some kind of a good working relationship with council in order to get things done in the city?
I'm talking about you can't say how you're going to do that until you know who's going to be there. Okay, there are some good people running for council who have different points of view. than the old council people that has been there for years and years and years. Now, I'm not suggesting that you can't work for them, but it would be a problem for me with Councilperson Bass supporting Jim Kenney when the problems we have down in our district, and she comes all the way down into North Philly, she never questioned or never asked, you know, what are we going to do about the violence? What are we going to do about the vacant homes? What are we going to do about the raccoons and the possums and all this?
And the kangaroos?
That we can't. Yeah, well, the kangaroos, well, the raccoons
Didn't
look like
kangaroos. Did you say kangaroos are one of these?
I was speaking about the overgrown overgrown raccoons. You know, we have raccoons that walk around in North Philly. They look at you and say, you better keep walking. You know, I mean, they walk and they have their families with them.
We're talking raccoons here, right?
Yeah. Go down to 22nd and Lehigh sometime. Walk through the community. You know, it's really, really bad. And gentrification and all that type of stuff. So what right does a council person have to say, this is the person that we're going to put on you? I mean, you know, it's just not right. You know.
Well, you know what? Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. And again, talking with Milton Street in this hour of Radio Times. He is running for mayor of Philadelphia, one of the Democratic candidates that folks can vote for on the May primary. And that's May 19th. And again, we spoke earlier in this week with Nelson Diaz and Anthony Hardy Williams last week, Lynn Abraham and Doug Oliver. And tomorrow it'll be Jim Kinney's turn. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This has become a very interesting race, and our guest Milton Street has had a long history here in Philadelphia, served in the legislature in Harrisburg, and joins us on Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Milton Street. He's telling us why he wants to be the next mayor of Philadelphia, the fifth of six candidate interviews that we have hosted here on Radio Times. And we want you to join the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also put a comment on our Facebook page, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me ask you, we haven't really talked about schools, and as I think everybody knows, it's important to address the challenges that schools in Philadelphia face. One of the things that you have suggested as a way to get money for the schools is video bingo, and this is an idea you've had for some time. How would that work?
Well, I had that idea back in 1982 and 83 and 84, and I put the legislation in. And believe it or not, I had support for it, but it was before gambling. And some of the major newspapers and some other people kind of scandalized my name and said, oh, he's advocating gambling, and we should fund our schools, but we shouldn't do it through gambling. Well, at that time, we were $20 million in debt. Now, while I'm not clairvoyant, I will tell you, I made this speech to him, and I said, look, if we don't do something now to fund our schools, 25, 30 years from now, we're going to be $300, $400 million in debt because we're walking backwards. And we would have put 6,000 machines across the city of Philadelphia in airports, bus stations, beauty shops.
And we're talking bingo here, right?
Talking bingo. Right. And we would have raised $100 million, and I went to Bally's and had a machine made. Took the machine to city council, and Joe Coleman was there, and we showed him how it would work and everything, and everybody played it. Got a unanimous resolution that this would be a way to raise money for the schools, okay? Would have raised $100 million on the low side, $360 million on the high side. Now, this was before gambling came. And that's people were saying, no, we can't do this. We don't need to fund the schools through gambling and everything. And if we do this, we're going to have casino gambling. And who needs casino gambling? Well, here we are. We got casino gambling online. We got casino gambling in all the states around us. We have casino gambling in the state of Pennsylvania. But we still don't have any money for our schools. Okay, so.
Why bingo, though? That seems kind of like an old-fashioned game, I have to say.
Well, at that time, you got to understand, we were talking in 82. And I figure if the church made so much money, the Catholic Church made all this money playing bingo, you know, because we work for the schools too, you know. And you used to go to bingo games back then, and it would be packed. They used to bus people in at the Blue Horizon down on Broad Street. So bingo at that time was very popular. I could have used video poker. But poker wasn't very popular at the time. That was a defeat right out of the gate. So what happens is now we have to get games of choice.
Games of chance,
and we say games of chance, which is a choice. Okay, so what happens is, and people don't want to deal with this. We have 75,000 blacks in the school district, 25,000 Puerto Ricans, and 19,000 Caucasians, and then the rest is others. Okay, which are minority for the most part. So you have a minority school district, but you don't have. The minorities don't own enough real estate to fund the court through real estate. They don't have enough money through jobs to do it through taxes. So it has to be there's two types of taxes. There's an indirect tax and a direct tax. So it has to be an indirect tax, okay?
Gambling is an indirect tax?
That's exactly right. It's an indirect tax in terms of your choice. You either want to, gasoline, tax on gasoline, it's indirect tax. I want to drive a car. I don't want to pay tax. I'll ride my bike or I'll ride a skateboard or whatever. I don't have to pay gasoline tax. All I got to do is stop driving the car.
I'm just saying, thinking of the lottery. I'm thinking of other games of chance where people, think they're going to be winners, but they mostly end up losing.
I'm not concerned about what people think. That's a personal choice. I'm concerned about the end result. Even though people end up losing, then senior citizens get almost $1 billion a year.
Right.
They get, so we're not talking about people and making a good choice or a bad choice because they have $15 for groceries and they go buy, a lottery ticket.
Right.
I'm not talking about that. You can't legislate that. That's the power of choice. God gave us the power of choice, and some of us use it.
Wisely, and
some of us don't, And at some point in our experience, all of it use it unwisely. Ask me, I know. But
you said it.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I've made some bad decisions, But the point is, and it wouldn't be, if you don't admit you've made some bad decisions.
Oh, I'm 100% in agreement with you.
Okay. So what happens is we have to support an indirect tax. That puts the legislators in Harrisburg in a position where they don't have to answer to their constituency. They don't have to say to their constituency, why are you sending my money down there to a school district? There's so much violence and radical and kids don't want to learn or whatever, okay? So what they say is, here, we're going to give you the right to raise this money and manage your own schools. That's going to be the easiest way and the most direct way that we can get. And if anybody thinks they're going to go to Harrisburg and grab money, they're just not.
Well, let me get some folks to join the conversation. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. In fact, we have a tweet from Walter. He says, Milton Street won't be elected, but he has more sense than he gets credit for. And we have a comment from Eli from Fairmont. It says, it seems like Milton Street has a history of this baggage. It's not just the past. It's nonstop. How can voters get past all these issues? I don't think there is any way to do so. I don't think like he's taking things seriously. So someone in support of you, someone who's a critic of you.
Well, let me just answer a question. See, and I understand that. I have no problem with it. But we have two value systems in the city of Philadelphia. You have the value system of the educated, which I refer to sometimes as the elitist. Then you have the value system of the poor. Okay? I'm trying to represent the poor. And it's very difficult to do both and get both. Because that's one of my problems down through the years. Sometimes what you have to do is, and my father say, you want to get the attention of a donkey, you got to hit him in the head with a 2x4. Well, to get the attention of the system to represent the poor people out there in the district, in other words, we have a 28% population in the city of Philadelphia that's
poverty
below
rate.
The poverty
yes.
level. Okay? So those people have been excluded from the system. Okay? Now, while I'm not interested so much in the haves, my campaign is centered toward the have-nots. And I will tell you, okay, if I get the ex-offenders or the re-entry community, the veterans that are not getting service, and the parents that want this violence stopped, the voters are blocked, I will win. The question is, how do you get them to vote? How do I get them to the polls? So I threaten, why do you think they're trying to get me off the ballot? Mm. Because it's not about Milton Street. It's about that block of voters out there that he potentially represents and maybe just might motivate them to go vote. That's why the polls can't tell where I am, because the polls say we've polled 500 of people who are most likely to vote. Well, what about those people who are most likely not to vote if they're moved to vote?
And that's, as you say, that's
where,
your mission. That's your job.
That's my mission.
Let me get Kevin from Northeast Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think you have the greatest show on the radio.
Oh, you're very nice, Kevin. Thanks so much.
Easily the greatest.
So
every Philadelphian should be listening to this series, by the way.
Well, put your question to Milton Street, but thanks for that, Kevin.
Okay, 1% sales tax for a permanent source of funding for Philadelphia school system. Is that a pipe dream of mine, or is it something that makes sense, is feasible? Is it something that could come to fruition? Because I just strongly believe that we're only going to be as great a citizen as the citizenship as our kids are educated. You know, it's going to breed crime, continuing drugs, bad habits, trash, illiteracy, codependency. So is there a way that we can do 1% and then all of that money go to the city of Philadelphia School District? And let's say there's a trigger where, okay, once it reaches, say, a Cheltenham or Lower Marion student-to-pay ratio, then we can put it into, say, the pension fund or something else. But it can't be touched until that happens.
You know, Kevin, let me toss that to Milton Street. I mean, already there's an additional percent.
Yeah, you won't get the votes for it. Kevin, it's the reason that I said, you know, you have to raise people who are working taxes to support a minority school district. And people that's not going to say it, they're going to say, you know, that's not going to happen, okay? And I've been in discussions about that. And it's very tough sometimes to face the reality of what we're dealing with. You know, I don't want to call people racists or bigots or any of that type of thing. It's a financial issue. Why should you raise my taxes or my real estate taxes to support somebody else's children who perceptually, some of the parents are lazy, some of them don't want to work, all they want to do is take from the system. You know, once we face these issues as it relates to the minority community in general, but the black community in particular, then we're going to be able to solve them. But as long as we make out it's something that it's not, okay, we're going to talk about raising taxes, and there's going to be a backlash to the people to the legislators who were elected. You know, even in the Northeast and some other areas where people work hard every day, and then they have to take their tax money and send it down to a school district where it appears that people don't want to learn. So that's why my interest is really, really on the violence. Once we stop the violence, and what I would intend to do is change the conversation about the Philadelphia School District. It has to be the public schools. It has to be changed from a district that's listless and they don't want to work and are a bunch of hoodlums to those people in Philadelphia are very, very serious about their education. Mm. They've cut down on the violence. There's no nonsense in here. The teachers can teach. They're getting supplies in there. There's a new day, and they're serious about their conversation. Now you've removed a whole lot of the fog and the cloud when you go to have a discussion about funding.
Kevin, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Quoting something you said, Milton Street, I would say to Superintendent Hyde, he's the superintendent of the school district, you make sure the teachers teach. You make sure that we have good quality teachers in the schools. That's your job. The discipline comes from us. We're going to take care of this discipline issue. You're not going to have to concern yourself about that. When you say us or we, are we talking about these sort of newly hired?
I'm talking about the parents. I'm talking about the parents. I'm talking about, you know, actually the whole discipline thing starts in the home. But where you have a situation where you have babies raising babies, then you leapfrog up over the discipline thing because there's family structure has deteriorated, okay? But it, I think Hillary Clinton said it years ago, it takes a village to raise a child, okay? So what I want to do is we're going to put this hedge around them and set standards. And when these children are on the corner, and it's a heavy lift, but I will tell you, and I'm going to say it again, 95% of the people in the community are good people. And we're going to mobilize those good people. If you put them in structure, they will respond.
Let me see what Art from King of Prussia has to say. Art, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
As a preamble, I'd like to say that I grew up on the south side of Chicago. Started kindergarten in 1941, and throughout my education, I have been in integrated schools. I watch the news, and I watch kids shooting each other, I don't know what for, and I am afraid to go into Philadelphia. What's he going to do about the guns in Philadelphia?
Art, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Milton Street, go ahead.
Well, that's a good question. The guns are only one part of it. You know, there were 38,000 thefts. There were 7,000 rapes, 8,000 burglaries. There was a home invasion last night. But the guns are not the problem. It's the people who have the guns. You know, the gun can't shoot. Okay, so we're dealing with the people, and we're dealing with a standard. And I will tell you, if you, you know, you have, it's a problem where we have, one, we have to deal with mental health. There's a lot of mental health issues out there. There's a lot of people out there when they do the shooting and whatnot, they're not on clicking on all eight cylinders. And I understand the fear. And that's why I'm saying, and what that does is that doubles back where we can't get investment into our community because of the crime. Nobody that has $100,000, $200,000 is going to invest it in a high crime area. There's two reasons why they won't invest. One is crime, and the other is the inability to hire a productive workforce. Okay? So that's where the education comes in. And this wraparound program that I have is going to deal with the guns.
And this is starting when children are young and after school?
Yeah, and it's going to start, you know, we can deal, if we are parents and we are adults and we can't deal with 15, 14, and 13-year-olds, then something is wrong. Mm. If we can't discipline those people, and when the man who's walking his dog was shot, they're 14 and 15-year-old. When the person who, the pizza man was shot the other night, 14 and 15-year-olds. So we know who's out of control. And those are the people that we're going to confront with a mighty propelling force. I mean, they will understand that there's certain behavior in these communities that's now out of balance.
And okay? how will that message be transmitted? We're almost out of time here.
On a one-on-one and a group and a community basis, we will confront those kids. We will go into school and confront them. We will talk with their parents. We know who they are. The parents know who they are, even no matter how young the parents are. You know, there has to be, and a lot of them, let me just say this, they just want to know that somebody cares. Mm-hmm. You know, and some of them get hung up in the, I really enjoyed last night watching that lady grab her son out of that crowd and smack him. Yeah, man, she smacked him up smacked him upside his head. But I would have probably had a big strap or something whipping up on him because it's a behavior that's unacceptable, okay? And we'll set those standards. And once, you know, Philadelphia will never be an international city until the violence is gone, okay? And it's a very, very important issue. It will never grow and realize its potential as long as this violence is there, because the gentleman that just called is only among thousands who are afraid to come to Philadelphia because they're afraid they might get shot. Well, and I personally don't blame them.
Well, I've been working and living in and around the city and never gotten shot yet. So,
well, you've been living around first-class Philadelphia. Go out in the second-class Philadelphia.
I used to work up in Kensington, Philly, okay? Years and years ago, going doing home visits.
But the it's a perception. I mean, when you have that many shootings, you know, there's a natural fear.
Oh, I agree. Totally. Yeah. Milton Street, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
We have to go?
We have to go. They're playing my song.
Oh, okay.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Milton Street running for mayor of Philadelphia. The fifth of six candidates. Tomorrow we'll be talking with Jim Kinney, who also wants to be mayor of Philadelphia. And again, the primary is May 19th. Also, go to the Newsworks blog, The 99, and you can find out much more about all sorts of races here happening here in the city. I'm Marty Moscow. Wayne, thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.